That's Deborah McPherson on that DeborahNIST conference.
Yes.
Okay. It's been really neat to listen to everybody first to try and understand what it is that you're trying to do and want to do for the general public. So I'm going to try and respond to that from the other side in two different ways. I work for a company called WDG Architecture, and at some point the map will come up. And we've been here in Washington since 1938 and have done over 400 buildings, including this building that we're in right now. So we have a corporate knowledge that I'm trying to do something like an answer machine with non-computer programming people, but with architects to make access to like our best practices, and these are details that work, and really kind of get everything from some of the older partners that are getting ready to leave, because we have new people come in and they don't know what our standards are. So I'm trying to make a map of our standards, and also we have, because Washington is the way that it is, we have a lot of different local jurisdictions, and so it's hard to keep track of what you're supposed to do to comply even in these different areas. And then on the other side of that is Accuracy and Aesthetics, which is a nonprofit organization which I founded 3 years ago. And our board is comprised of people that are in cartography and music and computational linguistics and kind of all across a bunch of different areas, and trying to make something to interact with information in spaces that's based on how we do this in architecture. A little bit of study of how people move through and what you need even in the event of an emergency, like how do you get out of there, things like that. So here on the right is a map of the different buildings we've done, and NSF is kind of down here in this bottom corner. And then Accuracy and Aesthetics, this is a painting that was done by a friend of mine, Billy Hodak. And what I think is interesting about it is because this lady's talking. He says it's a picture about a lady talking too much. But not only is she talking too much, she's also, like, retelling the story again. And I think there's a lot of information floating around out there that wants to get worked on again. It needs to have somebody be able to take it at sort of a very clean level and do their own stuff with it. So I might need to do that again. Okay, so I wanted to explain a little bit about what our architectural information is made of, because I think that maybe you don't know what construction documents are. So the first thing that probably comes to your mind is drawings, and I work with a quality control committee there because we get around the terminology problem by saying, like, you can't have any words on the drawings. Everything is all just codes, and it's very precise. And then the next thing that we have is specifications, which then does go on and explain, like, this material is this. It has to be handled in a certain way. But the codes on the drawings are really, really important, and I wish we could have our transition into building information modeling take these codes and connect them all the way through. Right now, you have to sort of do it by hand, and you've got these little tiny things holding it together. I'm really interested in these purple numbers that are part of this collaborative work environment because I feel like they're kind of like that. And then the next part is really construction documents are made of these three things, which is the drawings, the specifications, and then also the contract itself. And that's where all the money is, and that's where we strive always to put things where they belong. Like, we can't hide something that should be in the drawings in the specifications. We can't, something that's part of the contract can't be somewhere else. Like, so you're always constantly trying to put it in the right place. And I'm also trying to decipher where that line is between what is specified and what is shown. And so then if you go, like in CSI is an organization like American Institute of Architects that their motto is say it once and say it in the right place. Because if you say it twice, then somebody's wondering what you're talking about. And then so to me, when you start to talk about organized information on a really, really big scale, what is the right place to say these things, and where can you have this reliable location of going to look up what you're interested in? And so this is a drawing that I did a long time ago. I'm interested in science, but I also think of what's happening today as being this, like, the ultimate museum exhibit of everything that we've ever done. And so what extends even beyond science? And so this was I talked to Dick Clavins at one point about this part that's outlined in the red, and that was a super really, really early iteration of the, what has now become these maps of science that are really detailed. And unlike construction documents, once they're done, you want it really consistent throughout. I feel like in the beginning part of a design, it doesn't have to be consistent, and that if maps of science can happen, there are going to be so much more detailed there, then they're going to be like maps of music or maps of any, all this information we may be able to get at some point. It doesn't bother me if science could be more detailed and more figured out. But Dick said, no, you know, if you're going to make a map of everything, you at least start out on a level playing field. So that's where that one was. And then now the next one is we're looking for a new computer because we want to make this model. These lines aren't really very... they don't really say very much, but these, I'm trying to show with these lines and want to be able to make at some point is this world where everything is held down and it is right and you can rely on it and count on it's up to date. And then I want something like an eject button. Like, once this thing is out of date and once it's been proven wrong, send it into outer space. And so, from that, like, if there's three main areas of this world, science, storytelling, and laws, that laws would be, the opposite side of that is like it's unpredictable and unenforceable. Like you can't have these codes to do something a certain way if you're never going to be able to find out if anybody's complying. And then storytelling certainly is valuable, and I think as we get more and more online information, we do need to be taken by the hand every once in a while and led through. And, you know, make it a little bit more exciting and make it a little bit more compelling and like you want to know the end. And then on the other side of that is just this pure fabrication. Like, you know, how much time do you want to spend at something that doesn't actually have some reality about it? And then on the opposite side of science would be mathematically indescribable, that it's really abstract and it's really, you can't pin it down. How is it that you get from there to there? So these different spectrums. And then also, a really good look, document that I rely on a lot was is called the Uniform Location of Subject Matter, and it's actually a table. And I think it would be really great to be able to get to like science.gov or any of these big efforts and have something like that, that you could see the whole table or see the whole outline of the land in some way. Okay. And now, yeah. So I see the problem of trying to design these big interfaces with lots of information as a space visualization problem because, I don't know, that's just where I'm more from the architectural background. And if you look at how architects used to work before, now you can see that we're trying to all move, like, collectively into this thing called building information modeling. And this drawing right here was done by Alan Edgar, as part of a standards writing group for the National Building Information Modeling Standard. And this thing kind of unfolds, and it's really neat to see him present it, like, as it starts to open up and all this. But, like, we're no longer with our little components that we're familiar with. All of a sudden, everything's got to last forever. And I like the way that he's shown this on the side with the manufacturers. Everything's got to be all interchangeable, and it's all going to have to last forever because the people who manage the building now all of a sudden have to have this stuff. And it's hard to know how to specify it, which parts of that to keep and which parts of that to get rid of because there were some steps along the way in design that are gone. And maybe they want that, maybe they don't. So it's a whole new problem. And then if I compare the architectural stuff with maps of science, I think of maps of science like the drawings, but it's almost like they're an anti-drawing. They're the upside down of a drawing because you're not making it this way. You're sort of revealing it. It's like the drawing comes after or something. So how is it you're going to do this in a completely backwards way, and what would be the use of it? And then I think that there's just allocating the resources that if you know that there's problems in biology right now, there's a huge pressing problem, you can push some resources there. And so now I just have this, it's just a regular map, but it shows, you know, there's here's a trouble spot, let's get some things there because we don't have endless, infinite resources despite what it may look like. Okay, oh, and this is a little video. I think one of the things that would be really valuable for just the general public to have is as these big databases get built and all this access, as we start to get better and better at this, I really would like to take something like progress photos along the way. This is a Frank Gehry building that's in New York, and it's a part of almost every architectural specification that you have these progress photos done. And it's nothing that we would use to measure or make sure that things were being done right. They just have to do it every day so that, you know, the owner in Singapore or whatever can see, oh, look, they've gotten this far. And even if there's programs underway and even if they're not complete, I hope that they're being documented in some way so eventually they can get all put together and shown as they get built. It didn't work? Okay. Oh, did it work?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, and this one we'll have to stop at partway because it's a longer one, but the museum is a new museum that's being built, right, you know, to talk about site selection, it's like right in between the Capitol and the White House, and the First Amendment is their big priority, and it's, I really can't wait to go and see that place, and was lucky to go through a walkthrough with one of the main architects not too long ago, and they really, part of what makes that building work is they have such an amazing structural engineer, and he could solve these problems, kind of like what she was talking about before. You know, gee, we don't want to have this column in the middle of this space. Okay, well, let's make the beams twice as big and do it this way. Like, I'm not sure what the equivalent of a structural engineer is for these designs that I, you know, hope are going to be realized at some point. That's okay. Yeah. So then, to have a map of science sort of as in a contrast, you saw when Cuddy was making this thing come to life. And I think even people who aren't interested in science per se, they might be some little 7-year-old kid who's like, maybe what should I do? It would be neat to see how things grow, whatever they are. And I think another real issue today is that I just wish scientists had more of a voice. You know, we're directing money around things and people have agendas and all these stuff. And I don't think it's ever going to be that scientists will ever have like a unified voice, but I think it could be louder. And I think things like maps of science will help scientists say, you know, what they need and what they're working on and help people ask some questions. And so I was trying to like address the workshop questions one by one, and how is it that design could, how will public information be able to help? And on the architectural side, definitely access to the latest code requirements, because you don't want to be talking to anything that's later in the local jurisdictions. Also, I think it helps people to put together new, like, it's not even just science applications, but if you said like a storytelling or a law application, having access to property lines. Because this example here is a lady that's out in Czechoslovakia, and they're going way back to 1945 when her family used to own this, and then the war came, and then this factory was built there, and so she's trying to get some of these things back. And by having public information, you can piece together these stories. You can start to, you know, so it also means public information has to be right, because you're going to go and try and argue your point probably in court or wherever. Also, the testing data is really useful for architecture, and I'm wondering what the equivalent in data architecture is for testing data. Like, do we share, like everybody undertakes their own study, or I'm not sure how much of that kind of gets really put together. And then I hope in the long run that some of these duplicated efforts, I think people are steaming along on their own tracks, and hopefully that can get a little bit more streamlined at some point. So that you're really talking about moving ahead and not doing work that's already been done. And I think if you have some kind of uniform location of subjects, that it would be a lot easier to go there and say, oh, well, somebody's already done this work. I can't get my patent here. I can't do this thing here. I need to contact them and take from what they've done and now build ahead on it. So how do we show what that looks like? And this is a couple of diagrams on the left. One is the programming of a building. You know, there's this much office space, and there's this, here's where the bathrooms are, and here's our meeting rooms, and, you know, you're given these criteria. We make all these things work together. And I guess there's a requirements document is something that people seems like an almost universally hated term, that it's really hard to make the requirements document. Like, you gave me what I asked for, but you didn't give me what I want. Like, what is the requirements document that the public could do and say, this is what I want from science.gov? You know, we don't know. Like, can you give this much space to this type of activity and this much space to this other type, and how do those all fit together, and what needs to be next to each other? And then, so that's like within a building. And then the next one below is by a company called MapWise, and that's in a community that, you know, retail, restaurant. There are plans that it's whether or not they work, they can be made to work, you know, and you would hopefully save yourself some time and make it work better for people that are actually in there. So if you want to talk about public places in the real world, like the public places that are in the virtual world, what kind of space planning is happening there? And how is it even shown? So the ones on the right are more about information, public information space, and this chart was made by a call center. And the big part, the blue part, is questions that they have all the time. Always, you know what I mean? And the answers are always the same. And then, you know, obviously varies down. But I think that when it comes to public information in the public information space, you do have to have this huge part that is answering the same questions over and over and over again. And it should be real easy to go in there. It's the lobby. Like, where's the bathroom? Right there. You know, and that just gets answered. And you don't keep, that way you can put your experts and the people that really know a little bit more on that tiny wedge where you need some, that somebody's really going to try and pin them down. And then I really like that picture at the bottom just because it's a AV place, but how it's all coming and going and what we understand at this answer center, like, how did they make their chart? Did they know that people really got the answer? Or, like, you know, sometimes you'll go onto a website and they'll say, did this answer your question? Or I think there needs to be, I wish there was more studies or more information out there just to look at, just a regular person on something like science, like science.gov, that did this answer your question? Like, how do we measure that? You know, not that anybody's going to say that's the wrong way to measure it, but it'd just be interesting to know. Okay, and then hopefully these will come up. But there's a point about, when you're doing these designs and we're working on a building and it's not ready for bid yet and it's not ready for permit yet, and if you were to parallel that with mapping science and like this incomplete island here and this throngs of the public kind of coming up here and they want to see it all. At our, the heart of the construction document world is this liability. I mean, we can't put things out there that are too early, but at the same time, we can't hold them in our shop forever because at some point they do need to go in front of the permit office. And so we have to release the documents. And at what point are you going to start releasing maps of science that are incomplete? And I think, you know, now. Because why not? And because you would know that you have to start somewhere, even if these shapes can't be completed. And we have all these domains colliding with each other, and everybody kind of has a way that they like to have it done. But if you had a process of making information be published out there, there's going to be some process that could get followed, I hope, at some point in time, that it's not everybody just starting again, restarting from scratch. And how it gets tested and how it gets measured, I think, is really important, because then that's what we use ultimately to fill in the blanks. But then once all that work is done and the documents are released, like when the contractor does get our stuff, they have to do it that way. It is not up to them if they want to move where the stairways are. Like, it complies and they have to follow it. And so I don't know, in making, you know, somebody says, well, I want to map the EPA's database, at what point does it become like, okay, we cannot negotiate these points anymore because they comply with this over here? I think at some point that'll be pretty useful. Because ultimately these end up as public records, like land records, like something everybody wants to be able to trust and use and come back to. And then this, I just picked out two government information things that I like. One is NASA images. It's just stunning. It's unbelievable, and they have so many, and they're free, and they're easy to get, but they're really hard to look through. But once you get there, there's just a ton of great stuff. And so I wish that was one that was a little easier to, that people knew was even there. And then also the Census Bureau, I think it's interesting how really you can, you, they only, I guess, they only give out the tables, but I would like to see some more maps. I would like to see some more just interpreted fact-finding stuff. And part of the reason I want to do that is because I want to reapply some of these models that might work in some area to another area. Like, for example, this diagram on top is for small business taxes and where it's all going. And then if you push the next thing, like if you say, I like where these arrows are, I like how this is all broken apart, this is where GIS is. GIS is in the middle. And then that means building information modeling is going to kind of be on that side. And then it means the manufacturers, they do need to be separated from us. So we're going to put them there. And then the International Observatory Project is super cool. I don't know if so many people know about it, but, like, the fact it's kind of being made from within and they've got their own standards and all this stuff is great. And but what are we getting out from that? Like, what can we see from that? And then the next, okay. So just like, how does that all flow and then where does the money go from one to the other? Is it like the small business tax? You know, it would be funny to make some parallels between those two. Okay, and now this, sustainability is a big issue in architecture right now. Not only the building materials, but also people's work in these spaces and natural daylight and some of these things that are really coming out because of scientists and architects getting together a little bit more. And then this one that drawing is just concrete. How do you use it? Where does it go? How does it come back? And then I found this other similar example, which was a scholarly information cycle. Like, how does it keep going? And in sustainability, you're asking, like, what's the waste? You know, which is what's the waste? And what is government waste? And what does it mean to be sustainable for this information to come back around again? And what can we compare it to? And so I wanted to do the kind of the opposite. It seems like you could take these real-world situations and say, okay, this is what's happening in public information land. So from the other side, like if you said, okay, maps of science as an example, what is something in the real world that seems to be similar? And I think it's Arlington County because they are into really long-term planning. Like when the metro was first being built through here, they asked for twice as many stops as they needed. And it's really a matter of this smart growth, and they're going up, and they're doing all kinds of stuff about what the balance is between certain use groups and use areas. And now they have this neat program going on called Think Arlington and Brain Power Alternative Energy. And so I just think it's one of these things that I think maps of science are very forward-thinking. I think a lot of these trying to consolidate searches across are very forward-thinking. So this is like the real-world example. And then I wanted to compare, you know, in a real contract, you have basically, it doesn't matter how many people are involved in the building, it's always boiled down to architect, owner, contractor. That's it. You know, it doesn't matter, there might be 50 on each part of it. And if you were taking these maps, it was informal, like you're not even, like it's not documented, it has this thing. And then this map was by the Dutch. And so if you say that all this information is really owned by the general public in some way, but we have no claim on it, or it's not been formalized in any way, that you could say, well, this map was made by science in Area 67B. Like, is that the contractor? Is that the owner? Like, how can we force some of these making of things into these roles? And then in conclusion, I think this was the best quote I ever heard on Analog Forum, which is a really interesting online discussion area, and it's kind of like going through the trenches in World War II. You know, you're a little bit afraid of your head getting shot off while you're going through there, but it's really interesting. And this quote was by Ed Barkmeyer at NIST. The problem is that the Internet is still the big city of the Middle Ages. We know how to build all kinds of buildings, and we have lots of demand for them and lots of construction of various kinds and qualities going on. But nobody's responsible for much of it. We have no civil engineering discipline. We have no land use planning. We have random patchworks of streets. We're carrying water on foot in buckets from the most convenient well. We have no police force, no fire brigade. We have sewage problems, crime problems, and frequent plagues. Some communities thrive and some die out, and we really don't understand why. Yet people keep coming back here because there's education and jobs and entertainment and money to be made. Ultimately, technology enabled us to get control of it, and fires and plagues forced us to. But it took 7 centuries, so I hope the Internet experience is shorter. And then, to build on that, it. Like, it means the big city of the Middle Ages. And, like, I want to be able to take, I want to draw from that one to that one and keep those together. Next time somebody looks at that, I want them to know what that's what it means. And then forced us to update building and public health codes. Like, what are the building and public health codes of access to these spaces? Do we have them? Like, how many people are going to have to, like, get caught in a fire before we invent the exit device? It's, we don't even know what's coming up, but hopefully not too many disasters will prompt it, that it can be the other way. And then this is Charles Sanders Peirce, whose Wikipedia page is being held until the disputes get settled, I guess, you know. And they're like, it's not that anyone agrees this is the right content, but anyway, his first rule of reasoning was to not block the way of inquiry. And I like that kind of on both sides of it, because when you think of going into a building and you see this space and you might go through something little and you come out there and it's really big and it's just, it's inspiring to have that transition from in scale. And like, I don't know, people talk about the scalability, but I never see any examples or know what it means to, can you go from what, can you open up all of music? Can you go around a corner and then like, wow, here's this thing, I want to go in this little room for physics. So the way of inquiry, I think, is you want to get pulled and you want to be more curious to keep going some way. And I liked earlier this morning somebody was saying, like, we kept the searches so that you could follow them. And I hope more and more of that can be done. And, you know, the way of inquiry, like, who even knows, who can you follow right now? Who's tracking that stuff? What can you make of it to kind of rebuild? You put in this little acorn and here comes out the oak tree, and it's a little bit of a different oak tree every time, but it grows a certain way, and how can you use that to help people get through these areas?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Deborah.